You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. In some of our recent episodes, the recurring theme of itinerant preaching has been present. It played a prominent role in the personal histories of men like Benjamin Francis, Isaiah Burt, William Stedman, and William Crabtree. In the period between 1780 and 1830 in England, itinerancy was the practice of preaching outside of the regular Sunday worship services in various locations, often on a regular circuit, with a primary goal of converting the lost. It was usually done by pastors or other church-recognized men, such as gifted brothers, but not always. It focused on the rural areas because of the scarcity of gospel witness there. These places were often neglected by the established church. Traveling to them could be quite difficult. The work was hard, and it was mostly done by particular Baptists and Calvinistic Congregationalists. At the start, much of the preaching was out of doors, as men could gather a crowd. Later, it transitioned to mostly scheduled indoor meetings that better met the needs of the hearers and more closely followed existing law. Remember, this was still a time when all gatherings for worship in England had to be done in a place registered with the local government and led by an approved preacher. Itinerancy was sometimes an individual effort. At other times, it was the regular weekly circuit of the local pastor, or done by men hired by local Baptist associations or even mission organizations in order to evangelize a region. The historical roots of Baptist itinerancy are found in the interregnum, especially the period when Cromwell ruled. There was enough freedom for Baptists such as William Kiffin and Thomas Collier to travel widely, preach, baptize, and form churches. Baptists in the army during this same time regularly preached and established churches in the various areas where they were stationed. The inclusion of the scriptural idea of gifted brethren in the 1689 Confession of Faith encouraged the preaching of these men. In the middle and later 1700s, the Bristol Baptist Academy encouraged itinerancy. They were probably influenced in part from the Methodist preachers of the Evangelical Revival, especially George Whitfield and William Grimshaw. Remember that a number of notable Baptists were converted under their itinerant ministries. But for much of the 1700s, some of the particular Baptist churches were not outward looking. Their habitual status as an inferior and unimportant element of British society isolated them. Their strong doctrine of the local church and its purity tended to make them defensive. They considered themselves almost exclusively as God's garden enclosed and not as the light of the world. The effects of various forms of hyper-Calvinism in some churches inclined them to focus their energy on the saints and not on sinners. There were men of this sort who itinerated, such as William Gadsby, but they were not common. I recently read a book that added to and confirmed my understanding of Baptist itinerancy during this period. It is titled Established Church Sectarian People, Itinerancy and the Transformation of English Descent, 1780 to 1830, by Derek W. Lovegrove. It was published in 1988 and is a readable study filled with solid data points. Many times when reading a book like this, it becomes clear that the author doesn't have a solid background in dissenting history, but that is not the case here. Lovegrove moves accurately and easily through particular Baptist, Calvinistic Congregationalist, and Church of England history. His title is his thesis, that itinerancy in this period played a transformative role in Calvinistic, Baptist, and congregational churches. Let me summarize some of his points and arguments. Lovegrove posits several influences that brought about itinerancy. First, there was the example of the Anglican and Methodist preachers. Some, like Grimshaw, were local pastors who traveled into nearby regions and preached evangelistically. Others, like Whitfield, itinerated almost full-time. Related was the establishment of Trevecca, a theological seminary formed by Selina, Countess of Huntingdon. This produced preachers and included an emphasis on itinerant work. Some particular Baptists recognized that these men were fulfilling a scriptural duty and imitated them. A second influence was the Baptist Academy at Bristol and the Horton Academy in Bradford. Both strongly supported evangelical Calvinism and itinerant preaching, and their students were thrust into this practice. A third influence was the rise of the particular Baptist interest in foreign missions. A balancing concern was, but what about the heathen at home? Which was met, in part, with itinerant preachers. The itinerants were usually local pastors who preached in villages around their church location during the week. In the early days, these were individual efforts by self-motivated men. But this grew to include other men with teaching gifts. They were usually approved by their churches. Over time, the Baptist County Associations hired men to be full-time traveling evangelists, and eventually there were national societies that followed suit. The opposition to this was present and vocal, but not generally effective. The Toleration Act of 1689 was understood by dissenters to give them the freedom to worship and train their own teachers. Included was the right to preach. Much of the resistance came from the Anglican clergy, who argued that itinerancy was by self-appointed and ignorant men, neither of which was generally true. That it was not needed, an obvious falsehood, especially in the underserved rural areas, and that it was schismatic and against the spirit of the Toleration Act. They opposed the established religion being undermined by pluralism. These points were publicly disputed, not only by dissenters, but even by some within the established church who supported the practice of itinerancy. A second and occasionally more effective opponent was the local magistrate. They had the power to approve dissenting meeting houses and their preachers. As itinerancy increased, some magistrates fought against it by denying applications for these things. But a series of court cases ruled that these were rights of dissenters, not at the discretion of magistrates, and so the harassment stopped. There were only rare cases of actual violence against preachers, and these tended to be handled by the courts. Lovegrove lists several results of this transforming itinerancy that seem balanced and accurate. First, as a result of this evangelistic preaching, there was growth in particular Baptist churches. But the statistics that Lovegrove gathers clearly show that the rate of baptisms, new church memberships, and new church plants did not increase any faster under itinerancy than in the years before. What did dramatically increase was the number of hearers or adherents. These were those who attended worship but did not join. They became uncommitted chapel-goers. Often they came at a rate 4 to 10 times more than the members. Many were relatives of members but didn't have an acceptable profession of faith, and so they weren't baptized and they did not become members. Were they real converts? Perhaps they were, but feared the social stigma of joining the still despised Baptists. Was the dissenting worship used as a replacement for particularly poor state church worship in certain localities? These and other questions can't be answered. A second related result is an emphasis on buildings. The larger attendance necessitated larger meeting houses. With this came respectability and debt. Now, respectability is a double-edged sword, and while some good came of it, the negative effects also followed. Building debt soon began to curtail other church causes, but the structures were a way to draw more people and thus be able to better support a pastor. Churches without a resident elder was a large problem in Baptist life at this time, and buildings were one way that they tried to help that situation. Other results were a lessening of individual church isolation and growth in working relationships between churches. But over time, there was the creep of institutionalism that would later in the century have negative effects. Yet another result was a change in the model of pastoral ministry. In some cases, it moved from a congregational orientation to one of evangelism. Now, some men balanced this well. Others did not, and it may have contributed to the lessening of doctrinal convictions and teaching, which in the long term had a negative effect on particular Baptist identity. Most churches had only one pastor. The plurality of elders was not common. This meant that if one pastor was away itinerating during the week, another didn't step in. Instead, the deacons often managed things, and this began to change the biblical pattern of leadership in the churches. These are some of the ways that itinerancy transformed particular Baptist life in England. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist wishing you grace and peace.